You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 28th, 2021. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we decided after our 599th episode, what the hell, let's go for 600. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Everybody.
I feel about 600 episodes old.
And it's Memorial Day weekend as well.
It is. It is.
If you have someone in your family who passed away in war, we remember them.
Yes. Who's in the service and just passed away. We remember all of them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Yep. Exactly.
Last weekend, we went to a graduation ceremony for Junior Dude. Those of you that follow me on Facebook or on Twitter have seen the picture of Junior Dude graduating from Augustana College.
Big thumbs up.
Big thumbs up. Mm-hmm. And very, very proud of that boy. And proud of myself for getting to this point with him.
Honestly, it's been a team effort.
Well, and I've been a tiger mom in a different way than most tiger moms are.
Right.
Just fierce advocacy for my child who had needs and needed help with his education, and I made sure he got it. And I am so grateful to the teachers and those who made accommodations and those people who passed laws requiring accommodations. And as a result, he and a whole lot of other kids are going to make a contribution to the world that we would have missed had all of us not advocated for that kind of world.
Yes, indeed.
So let's keep advocating for that kind of world of inclusivity and appreciation for the contribution that all of us, regardless of our, from where we come from, mentally, physically, however, that we can all appreciate that.
And you brought some Kleenex along with you.
Because I started to cry. Not because he was graduating, because I'm just happy and excited that he's graduating, but every moment that I thought about him when he was 3 years old and had a vocabulary of about 7 words, and we got here, and, you know, he can now give a dissertation on the Statue of Liberty.
And he did. I got to admit, I got a little dewy-eyed when I thought of him at 30, living at home in the basement, which...
We are going to hope that, fingers crossed, that doesn't happen.
I have no reason to believe that's going to happen, but I thought that would be a funny thing to say, so I said it.
I think the economy is hopefully turning in a direction where people in his age cohort can get out on their own and older. You know, we want that. So now we also have another graduate in our home. Middle child is graduating from high school in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And she is off to Beloit, which leads us right into our letters show.
It does. Well, I should say that she is graduating. We're very proud of her. We suddenly discovered that she wants to go to graduation. And then we discovered that she would like some noise made about her graduation, which was not the original plan that she wanted.
She wanted nothing to do with it. She actually graduated
early,
technically in January. Yeah. She finished all her coursework.
But it was like, I don't want a cap and gown. I don't want to go. I don't want this.
And
like,
I, Mom ordered one anyway, because I thought, you know what? Mm-hmm. When she finds out that all her friends are doing X, Y, and Z for graduation, she's going to want to participate. Oh, I don't want to do any of that. I'm finished with high school. Yes. Goodbye.
I'm kicking the dust off this couch, down off my heels. I'm going to Beloit. And now, just like, frankly, every other high school student, with maybe one or two exceptions, now that the day is upon us, Der Tag is approaching, it's everything you want from a high school student is, you know, like, I want to go to graduation. I want you there.
I want a dinner. I want a party. I want a cake. I want my friends in the backyard. I want this. Yeah.
That's great.
And I think part of it, though, Driftglass, is the COVID restrictions have loosened.
Yes.
And I think, you know, 4 months ago, she was saying, I don't want anything, because she thought she wasn't going to be able to have anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and you do that. I don't wish for things that I don't think I can have. Like, I don't wish that Joe Manchin would suddenly become a liberal, because that is never, ever, ever going to happen. So,
And, you know, this is our letter show. We want you to know we're going to read your letters.
Uh-huh.
We had thought that we would give ourselves each one news story to talk about. And then this morning, the January 6th commission was voted down by Republicans.
Uh-huh.
There were two Democrats, one of whom had a family emergency.
Senator Murray. Uh-huh.
And we still don't know about, at this recording, of what happened to Kristen Sinema. But but the Republicans voted this down. Let's be clear.
That's clear. That's just what happened.
And you know, our wishes for hand picking a news story were usurped by the events. And I kept thinking this morning about you know, why put so much energy into this? Why, when you knew it was going to fail?
Yeah.
And I think they feel that they're winning the propaganda war, and I think they are.
Yeah. Yep.
Republicans are covering up the action, once again, covering up for Donald Trump, covering up for some very bad people on their side.
Well, and I think that there's also there's a calculation on both sides. On the Republican side, it's very simple, which is why I have no pity for people who say this all began in 2016 and nothing preceded it. There was no way of knowing this would happen. The Obamacare playbook is all that they know how to run, which is obstruct, sabotage, obstruct, then go on and meet the press and complain that Barack Obama won't lead and won't meet us halfway. And that led to, famously, a long article by a guy named David Brooks about, here's all the stuff that Barack Obama should be doing on healthcare to bring Republicans on board. And then Jonathan Chait, bless his heart, wrote an article saying he did all those things. You're arguing for him to do things he's already done to bring Republicans on board. What the fuck is wrong with you? And they're hoping Republicans are calculating that all they have to do is blow everything up, and then they'll go marching.
Run the 2010 playbook and they'll win. Yeah.
And then they'll go marching on to this week and meet the press and their entire right and all their, you know, sappers and saboteurs and collaborators in the mainstream media who will complain that Joe Biden didn't want to be that goons and idiots and lackeys in the media will let them get away with it. And the public, which is not a correct term because there's Democrats and there's fascists and then there's idiots in the middle who can't tell the difference, that the idiots in the middle who actually do decide a lot of elections will throw their hands up and say, well, there's really no difference between the parties. I like divided government. Let's give Republicans a chance. And that worked. It works over and over again. And as Mark Twain pointed out, you know, a cat that's once it's jumped on a hot stove won't jump on a hot stove, but it also won't jump on a cold stove either. And these people on the Democratic Party might have overlearned the lesson of you have to be bipartisan. You have to sacrifice your firstborn at the altar of both sides do it, or they will slaughter you on Meet the Press and other shows like that, because there is no liberal Fox News. There is no liberal radio network. There is no liberal outlet for news other than the mainstream press, where they keep thinking they're going to get a fair shake and they keep blowing it. Now, there are hopeful signs. I believe the work Blue Gal and Driftglass have done for years, along with many, many others, has made both sides do it a joke.
Yeah.
That there's no longer any automatic acceptance of that as the excuse. by even people who you expect to do that. Even Chuck Todd, I mean, occasionally boils
even
over.
Even Barack Obama uses the term false equivalence.
Yes, which is just, I never thought I'd live to see the day.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, I'm not privy to their strategies. I don't know if Joe Manchin is a stalking horse for Joe Biden, that he's out there just, you know, playing Hamlet and wringing his hands and rending his garments. And at the end of the day, he'll say, I guess we can't have nice things unless we slightly modify the filibuster.
Right.
And then that'll happen. That's,
well, and make it make the filibuster, the burden on blocking a bill belong to the blockers rather than anyone that wants to make progress. And this also reveals the lie that, you know, Mitch McConnell is some sort of tactical genius. He's got one play.
Right.
That's it.
And the idea that the better of the two choices is let Democrats just vote their own committee and then refuse to cooperate is insane. They got everything they wanted. The best of all the bad options for these traitors was have an actual bipartisan committee and have actual veto power over who gets subpoenaed and on and on and on. And they just were incapable of doing that because obstructing and denying and sabotaging everything is all they know how to do. And so that's all they do. And their base loves it. And their the people in the House who support them love it. And Donald Trump is down in Mar-a-Lago giving them the thumbs up. And that's all they care about.
And so we need 13 months of Benghazi hearings about January 6th.
We need.
Is that what you think?
I think we need,
I'm not hopeful about that just because Fox won't cover it. It's not going to make any difference.
Well, Fox will never cover anything.
Right.
You know, this is the part of the thing that I have learned painfully over the years, which part of don't wish for things that are never going to happen. I just factor what Fox News is going to do out of my equation because it is like, and you know what? The fascist government in Italy will never go for this. Well, of course they won't. They're fascists. That's
right.
Expecting them to be anything other than the scumbags that they are is a lost cause.
So the Democratic committees should have Benghazi hearings for the next 13 months and follow the money, follow the money, follow the money.
And every time
paid for this.
And every time another Republican objects to a subpoena or says there or plays Lindsey Graham, whatever.
You scream cover up at the top of your lungs.
You scream cover up. You scream cover up. What are you hiding? What are you hiding? What are you hiding? While at the same time you are pushing through infrastructure bills and jobs bills and family bills. And every time one of them hits the shoals of the 60-vote minimum, turn to Joe Manchin and say, hey, Joe, go get your 10 buddies over there who are the reasonable Republicans. I don't think you can get them because have you seen what they've done on the cover-up? Have you seen how desperate they are to lie and lie and lie? And put the heat on Joe Manchin. Make this his problem. And if you can't solve it, Joe, then get the fuck out of the way. But that's,
well,
you know,
he was humiliated. And maybe we need to just keep humiliating him over this.
I'm not privy to their playbook, but I know that people in this White House went through the Obamacare debacle
and
said,
a lesson.
Never again. We're never going to make this mistake again. We're not going to do the Clinton war room. We're not going to respond to every whack job, right wing, conspiracy that pops up. We're going to just ignore it. Because those people who are responsible for those things are, in the words of Drift Class, reprogrammable meatbags anyway. So why bother pretending that they can be persuaded? They can't be. If Sean Hannity doesn't crap it into their skulls, they don't believe it. So write them off and focus on what we can get done, which is this sector of the electorate, this much stuff. Let's move, you know, with some purpose and get shit done. And
Joe Biden's budget this week, today, you know, the Friday before Memorial Day weekend, comes out and is missing something, Driftglass. It's missing the Hyde Amendment.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's
he kept his promise on the Hyde Amendment.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful.
And so under this budget, Medicaid funds can go for abortion. And we'll see how that unfolds. I think that is a bargaining chip that will be swept away. But it lays the groundwork for getting this done.
Well, and I got a question. Quick question for you, Blue Gal. How long has Joe Biden been in office?
4 months.
4 months. In 4 months, we have passed a giant recovery bill and gotten 100 million plus Americans vaccinated. And people are not wearing masks where they don't need to. And I don't care about the confusion. If you can't figure this shit out, then wear a mask. Here's the thought. Right. If you're confused, just continue to wear a mask. It doesn't hurt you. I do that all the time here.
And speaking of masks.
One more bit of housekeeping, Blue Gal.
Yes.
I just want to warn people that today's show is going to be brought to you by all of our fake sponsors over the past 11 plus years. So get ready
I think we got most of them. I don't know if we got all of them, but I think we got most of them.
Well, some of them have gone out of business as, you know, COVID happens to even fake businesses and so on and so forth. So yeah, I think we got most of them. And if we are missing any of your favorites, please let us know. Letter number one comes to us today from Andrew. And Andrew writes, first, let me congratulate you for one of the most incisive and thought-provoking political podcasts to be found anywhere on the interwebs. Next, all hail your daughter, middle child, who has selected my alma mater, Beloit College, as her institution of higher learning. I arrived at Beloit in September of 1963, a skinny and scared freshman, 5,000 miles from my home in Honolulu. I'm sorry, are you out of your mind? You left Honolulu to come to Wisconsin in the winter. Okay, man, whatever. Having never ventured to the Midwest, obviously. 4 years later, I had learned how to write passable nonfiction, understand that even back then, Republicans were untrustworthy. As a reporter for the Beloit College newspaper, I interviewed Richard Nixon on his 1966 Midwest swing, touting the virtues of the GOP vis-a-vis liberal LBJ Democrats. And the art of layering clothing against Wisconsin's Arctic cold fronts. Now, 54 years removed from the turtle mounds of Beloit campus, I still remember fondly so many experiences that shaped my life and made me the unrepentant progressive I am today. Best wishes to middle child. May she find her calling at Beloit and become a true political powerhouse. Now, this 600th episode of the Professional Left Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Dukakis Khakis. Michael Dukakis' line of sensible men's pants for senseless times. Dukakis Khakis. They're not so good for running in.
All right. Next up, we have a letter from Dana, and this letter is handwritten. Hi, Blue Gal and Drift Class. So you want my thoughts on our delightful plague year, the year that has ripped the veil off how pathetic and dysfunctional this country is. Oh, to think of how easy this all could have been. I mean, when the pandemic started, it's not like I did deep research on the pros and cons of plandemic versus pandemic, or whether the virus cared about my freedom, D-U-M-B. All the CDC recommendations were out there for anyone paying the least bit of attention. I was wiping surfaces down, admittedly half-assedly, for a few weeks until the CDC said it was unlikely that COVID could be transmitted that way. I started wearing masks and social distancing in public as soon as the legit scientists said it would slow transmission. Such an easy thing. But being habitually half-assed, I never resorted to contactless commerce. I never bought a bunch of N95 masks. I bought a box of blue surgical masks that mostly went unused. In addition, I hand-sewed two cloth masks for personal use. But I never decreased my going to the store, didn't decrease my outdoor recreation, but always masking up and distancing when around others. Easy peasy. I'm a registered nurse. I've taken care of like 100 to 125 patients with active COVID over the past year. I followed all my employer's guidelines for keeping safe as best I could, including during the early days when we were told to keep using one N95 mask for 5 days in a row. We stored them in paper bags between patients. I'm also the caregiver of my 82-year-old mom, who is bedbound and has severe dementia. I share this duty with my brother, who has a normal day job. I work night shift so I can watch mom during the day. I sleep on a sofa next to her bed. Well, I used to do this. I quit my job 2 months ago. I'm done. COVID and this stupid country broke me. I've done what the experts advise to keep myself and others safe, but I've never been obsessive about any of it, just consistent. Like I said, I can be half-assed sometimes. I never felt locked down, whatever that means. I had satisfying interactions with my friends 6 feet away and masked. No one in the U.S. was ever locked down. I never got COVID, never tested positive. My mom never got COVID, and my brother worked around COVIDiots. We followed the advice of experts. That's all. I guess my point is, if everyone had just half-assed followed the experts' advice, we would have been New Zealand. We are living proof. But no, the country is full of shithead babies. I got vaccinated as soon as it was available. I am totally rah-rah about people getting the shot. And I am super liberal and live in Ohio. And I say three cheers for our Republican Governor Mike DeWine for taking the pandemic seriously. Also, brilliant marketing with that $1 million lottery for encouraging vaccination. Anyway, I'm just going to try to stay out of the workforce as long as I can. I need a long cooling off period before I feel like contributing to this idiotic society again. After Trump, COVID, the insurrection, anti-vaxxers, I really don't trust anyone anymore. Your fan, Dana.
Wow. Good letter.
Good letter. Thank you so much, Dana.
And you know,
and
Dana,
thanks for all your work as a nurse. My goodness.
I'm amazed at the work nurses do and have done. We know people in the medical profession here, and they carry the burden for everyone. In our house, you know, if you've ever seen the Andromeda Strain, the wildfire decontamination protocols were a little less severe than what put us through during the first few months.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wiped food down. I left it on the back deck. I hosed everything off. I Lysoled money if it had been handled by someone else, because I didn't know. And I didn't want my family to get sick. I didn't want my friends to get sick. So I followed the upper end of the guidelines. I fished around in the basement and found some old masks that we had bought when I was painting. And those are still down there. But as the guidance, you know, told us otherwise, as the science bore itself out, as we learn stuff, I changed my behavior because that's how science works. And now I go to the store, I go maskless where I can, I go masked where I think my neighbors might be freaked out if I walk in without one. I think it's like almost like Tony Stark talks about his chest piece. It's not a burden, it's a terrible privilege to be able to make my neighbors and my friends less afraid. Mm-hmm. And if wearing a stupid piece of cloth on my face makes my neighbors less afraid, I will wear it on my face for the rest of my life. I don't feel it's a burden. I don't feel it's asking too much. And I really do appreciate what you did, Dana. And I know how you feel. And you know what we always say, if the world has beaten you down and you need to take a break, then for goodness sakes, take a break. Mm-hmm. Sit this one out. You know, let us carry the burden for a while. We'll still be here when you get back.
This 600th episode of the Professional Left Podcast is brought to you by our very first fake sponsor, MacGuffin's Muffins. Building strong plot points 12 ways and the perfect snack while you're wearing Dukakis khakis.
This next letter is from Paul. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, congrats on your 600th episode. I've been a devoted listener and supporter of your podcast ever since hearing you as a guest co-hosts on the Bob Seska podcast, which is going to come as a surprise to Bob that we were co-hosts on his podcast. But
well, I don't think we were guests.
We were guests. I thought these two have very interesting perspectives on politics and the media, which turned out to be a tremendous understatement. Aw, your podcast has done the best job of capturing the vastness of the political challenges, how this is not a Trump problem, but a Republican problem. Never Trumpers are not our friends. And the corporate media is a compliant at best and complicit at worst. Although this perspective and the vastness of the challenges it highlights can be overwhelming and depressing at times, I find it much more useful than ranting on and on about how awful Trump is.
Mm-hmm.
The comment DG made in last week's show about the drinking age in Illinois brought a huge smile to my face. I guess I must be a similar vintage as DG. When I was a freshman at U of I, the drinking age was 18 in Urbana and 19 in Champaign. Freshmen were relegated to drinking, legally at least, at the crappy bars in Urbana. T-Birds was the one closest to my dorm. But I would be turning 19 in June, so I was heartened that my sophomore year I would have full access to the drinking opportunities on campus. Then on January 1st, the legal drinking age was raised to 21. Although it did not substantially impact my ability to drink, I never look back and think, gee, I wish I had drunk more in college. It was an emotional gut punch. Thanks for all your support and entertainment on this journey. I look forward to the next 600. Well, thank you. And I too never look back and say, you know, I wish I'd done more drugs and drinking when I was in my teens and 20s. This 600th episode of the Professional Left Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Hello Fascist. Hello Fascist is on a mission to provide every former Trump administration stooge and enabler with fresh, home-cooked meals with no planning, no shopping, and no one calling you out for your moral depravity in public. Sarah H. of Washington, D.C. says, previously, dinner meant sneaking into a restaurant in disguise and hoping that no one would recognize me before my food had arrived. With Hello Fascist, now I can try to fill the hole in my soul with deep-fried Twinkies and sour mash in peace. Stephen M., also of Washington, D.C., says, he was sick and tired of MS-13 gangs peeing in my Cobb salad. I know that's not vinaigrette, Pedro. So thank God for Hello Fascist. It's like a big, beautiful wall around my tiramisu. Hello Fascist, because those people are definitely peeing in your food.
And now we have a couple letters on the work from home issue.
Yeah.
Bob writes, dear Drift Class and Blue Gal, as you approach 700 episodes, I want to thank you for doing this week in and week out. You have managed to help keep me sane and grounded when it seemed like despair was the only path. So I want to say thanks, and I'll admit it was a huge ego boost when Driftglass quoted an email of mine as alert reader Bob. So thank you again. I do, however, want to express what does seem to be a minority view, but to be honest, I hated working from home. I found it isolating. I live in New York City, to be exact, Astoria, the People's Republic of Astoria, as I call it sometimes, and if anything, it made my work even more dull. Again, I may well be in the minority here, but I also liked having a bright line between work and home. When the day was over, no matter how bad it was, and it could be bad, I was done for the day. And if they wanted to make me feel miserable, they were going to have to wait until 9 a.m. tomorrow. For me, working from home smudges that line, and I can only imagine that the pressure as days go by to be on call 24/7. Is going to become huge. Maybe I'm just an outlier. I'm single and don't have a family, so that may have something to do with my experience. Of course, now I'm looking for a job, so this is all rather moot. Hey, Bob, we hope you find a job soon.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just wanted to toss my 2 cents in. I am alert reader Bob, and we wish you luck on the job search. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
This 600th episode of the Professional Left Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Where the Good Lord Split Ya. Emergency farewell party planners. If you've still got a Mark Halperin or Matt Lauer in your office, you need to hurry up and call Where the Good Lord Split Ya. We've got a post-Trump White House special where we will pack up their desk and call an Uber before we serve the farewell sheet cake. Bye now! Where the Good Lord Split Ya, emergency farewell party planner.
We also have a letter from an old friend of the pod, an old school blogger, Steve in Manhattan, a.k.a. Bloggenfreude, who writes, your latest discussion on working from home versus in an office made me write to you. Well, I'm glad it did. On March 12, 2020, we were sent home from the office. We seamlessly resumed doing litigation support and other work the next day from home. Citrix installed, get to work. I am currently working on a secure laptop, another law firm FedExed to me. So imagine my surprise when I saw a job circulating this week where the firm requires you to work in their offices in Times Square, the first such job I've seen since the pandemic hit. It's a firm I've always wanted to work for, and the rate is very good. But no way I'm riding the subway to Times Square every day, a mere 15-minute commute on a bad day. My girlfriend and I are both fully vaccinated, but see no reason to endanger our lives for office work that can be done from home. Steve in Manhattan. This 600th episode, the Professional Left Podcast, is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Fifth Column Vodka. For 4 long years, it took the sting out of being occupied. Fifth Column Vodka, because sometimes just getting through this shit is enough. We have had a couple more letters that we didn't get a chance to include on right. Working from home. A gentleman who employs several people and wants to see their faces and misses them and extroverts are like, you know, bouncing off the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, first of all, I'm glad that something we talked about almost offhandedly, but sincerely struck a nerve with so many people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And second, you know, I'm biased because I have worked in big offices. I have had a huge office. I've had a small office. I've had a floor practically to myself. And I've worked in, you know, in pod farms. Boiled down in my case, just for me, if you give me a laptop and a stairwell with Wi-Fi, I can do the, pretty much any job you give me to do. But that's just me. And the last couple of jobs I worked, there was no line between at home and work. They felt perfectly at home calling me all hours of the day and night because I was on call pretty much 24 hours a day. But I guess you and I both came to the conclusion that whatever works best for you is the best environment.
It, and that's great if you have an understanding boss who wants you to succeed doing doing the work the way you work best.
Right.
I'm blessed to work for Crooks and Liars in that way, in that the managing editor, Carolee, is really gets how employees work differently, and she really understands different work styles. And she got me right away. She got that I need a time schedule where my kids are at school. From this was 2007 when I started doing this, and I had little kids. So at that point, I needed a time frame where I was working mother's hours. And while the kids were at school, I would have those hours to work. And as time went on, she also realized that I need to work alone. And so I have other people that I, you know, when contributors and other people contribute to Crooks and Liars, I edit their work and make sure that the video looks right. And, you know, I do those editing jobs. And then I get my own posts up, but nobody bothers me during that time.
And I can attest to the fact that by nobody, you mean nobody. Nobody at home,
right,
none of the cats.
Right. I close all the doors. Yep. Even my phone is not in the office with me. I use the house phone to talk to John Amato when I need to. He's the owner of Crooks and Liars. And otherwise, just leave me alone because I need to work. And so, and that's my style. Now, I will also tell you that, you know, of all the people in our household, youngest child, who is absolutely the most social person in our household and has the highest level of social skills in our household, the pandemic was hardest on her.
Yes, absolutely.
Because she is somebody who loves being around lots of people. And it was very, very challenging for her to be, to feel that isolated, even though she could talk on her phone with her friends and so forth. She really likes being in motion, out with her friends, doing things with her friends.
Yep.
And so if that's your personality, where being in an environment where there's a bunch of people who you like and get along with and can bounce ideas off of and have fun and, you know, and that's that brings joy to your life, that makes this pandemic really hard and you're eager to get back to, to work. And my goodness, there are plenty of moms out there who do not want to blur the line between home and work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, there was a doctor on Twitter yesterday who missed getting her MD degree to go to her daughter's kindergarten graduation.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, you make decisions like that, right? So, no, I get it. The people that want to go back to work and go back to the office, I totally get that. And, but
well, the other end of
the workplace is going to have to adjust to the post pandemic.
Yes.
That's the point.
And it's been shown that it can. I mean, you don't need to be in the MSNBC studio to be on MSNBC.
Right.
They have proven it. PBS, all television news figured out, and cable shows, et cetera, all the live stuff figured out how to distribute broadcast to their people where they lived, which takes away the excuse, well, you know, you have to live in New York. You know, you've got to be here. You got to be right here. And we got to be have you on call. Well, I am on call. All you have to do is, you know, blow in a call. I can be on Zoom in 10 seconds. Pants, no pants, you know, whatever your rules are, I'm there. The real world just got really interesting with the introduction of at-home learning and at-home work in a way that actually functioned for an entire year. And that should change everything.
So we have a letter from Doug. What am I up to politically? A form of shock on the local level and the same nervous relief as most Democrats on the national level. After having spent 35 years in the East Bay having Ron Dellums and then Barbara Lee to vote for, I'm living in Tom the Fuck McClintock's district. And that has taken some getting used to.
I'm sorry.
The New York Times online tool from a few weeks ago that gave you the partisan breakdown of the 1,000 voters closest to where you live said that 71% of my neighbors are Republicans. That said, it really doesn't seem that way. Part of it is the fact that I have avoided talking politics with the neighbors that I know I need to be getting along with, many of whom are aging hippies who I have to assume aren't fans of the goddamn Republicans. But then there's Terry, who just had hip replacement surgery and often wears a new-looking NRA hat. And Joe, who was in the Navy, so who knows where his politics might lie. And then there's the dude with the jacked-up pickup truck with the Devin Nunez stickers on it. Stickers. Plural. Oh. I supported the weak tea Democrat that ran against McClintock last year, but she lost. The closest town to here is Oakhurst, where there were a few Biden rallies on one of the main intersections last year, but also a Republican headquarters in the local shopping center that had banners about recalling Governor Newsom, because that's what California Republicans do.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That place has since disappeared, and the building at the shopping center that used to house it is vacant. That doesn't mean the Republicans have given up or gone away, though, and I have to deal with the idea that most likely 3 out of every 4 people I interact with in town are Republicans, if they are political at all. Fergus won the county with 54%, so it's not that lopsided. But coming from what is arguably the most liberal district in the country, that does take some getting used to.
Yeah.
Doug, we feel you.
We feel you, Doug.
Your class moved from Chicago to Springfield.
Jan Schakowsky's district.
Yeah. To Rodney Davis's district.
Of course, you had you moved from deep red Alabama to...
I moved from Boston, from Metro West Boston to Alabama, and then from Alabama to Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
So this is better. You know, Birmingham has a Democratic congressman and a black mayor. So Birmingham itself is not a Republican stronghold city, but the suburbs are, you know, the suburbs are worse than that. You go to the bank to cash a check and the bank teller has a Bible verse of the day turned out toward the customer. Mm-hmm. So it's real in your face evangelical Christianity the time.
And if your flesh starts to burn, she knows not to work with you because you work for the devil.
Yeah. Anyway, this 600th episode of the Professional Left Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Trumple Indulgences. For a donation of $20.22, get it, you will receive peace and forgiveness for having a Trump-voting relative and be given 10 Hail Bidens to wash the stink away. Trumple Indulgences.
It's quite a value for the dollar. We have a letter from another Paul, not the last Paul, but this Paul, who says, "I am a regular listener and irregular contributor. I live in a place where we've mostly been pretty careful about COVID restrictions. We're even debating and debating and debating moving the local Confederate monument off the courthouse lawn. That would be cool. Alas, our representative is Andy Harris, who has distinguished himself in many ways, all bad. Most recently, he voted against Congress giving gold medals to the police who protected them on 1/6. I kind of have to bite my tongue about him because I'm a member of a citizens lobbying group that tries to reach members of both parties. Aren't you glad you don't have that problem? Hope you and the internet kitties are well. Signed, Paul." Paul, this 600th episode of the Professional Love Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, the Heritage Foundation Transmission Repair Shop. When your hand-picked president reverses himself so many times in 1 week that you burn out your populist clutch.
And now we have a letter from Linda. "I'm listening to your latest episode right now, and it's bringing back memories. I attended one Lincoln Day dinner when I was about 17 in a little town in upstate New York. My dad, wonderful man that he was a Republican county committee member and had tickets, so I figured why not have a good roast beef dinner. I was just wondering how you guys can stand living in Springfield. Then I just heard Driftglass say, it's fucking Kentucky. Don't I know that? I live in Kentucky. Just across the river from Cincinnati, and have the awful distinction of having Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell as my senators,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And Thomas Massey, a la friend of Marjorie Taylor Greene, as my congressman.
God. Yeah.
So I feel your pain. I never miss your podcast. and was just looking at your website to get the email address. Nice page. I'll refer to it again. Well, we have our angel nerd Tammy to thank for that. I usually listen to the podcast in bed on my phone. You and Rachel Maddow have the honor. Oh, my God. You and Rachel Maddow being mentioned with her in the same sentence is blowing my mind. I just want you to know. Mm-hmm. Okay. You and Rachel Maddow have the honor of being able to put me to sleep sometimes. I think it's just because your humor relaxes me. And I'm so used to your voices, I feel comforted. I do listen several times some weeks, so I do hear the entire show. Linda also said that she appreciates the true partnership the two of us share, Drift Glass.
Oh, thank you.
We do appreciate that. Thank you so much, Linda. Mm-hmm. This 600th episode of the Professional F Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Technically It's a Salad, the shredded carrot iceberg lettuce side dish that says, whatever. Technically, it's a salad.
I love that sponsor. I really
That's
do.
A great sponsor. Because we've had that side dish.
We have. You know,
delivered to us.
Yeah. Tic Tacs and some parsley. Well, technically it's a salad, you know? We now have a letter from Ten Grain, the famous, infamous, internet known wide and far of mock paper scissors. Dear DG and BG, as one of your since day one listeners, I want to say congrats on your 600th podcast. Why, it seems like only a decade plus ago that you crazy kids launched this enterprise, and most weeks I catch it, and I'm both glad and proud to be part of the cornfield resistance. I wonder if you have any thoughts about the big money flooding the podcast space. Yes, I have many, 10 grand. And are podcasts facing the same forces as the blogosphere faced in the 2010s? Also, as it would be irresponsible not to speculate, is TikTok the new platform for pundits? Newspaper, > radio, > TV, > blogs, > pods, ? I shudder to think about George Will dancing, but, you know, regards, 10 grain. Well, I have many thoughts about the money flooding the podcast space, 10 grain.
Have to get on to our fake sponsor.
Many of which I don't think I'll be sharing with you today, other than, yeah, there's a lot of money for people who are attached to larger institutions, very much like blogging.
Yeah.
But this 600th episode of the Professional Love Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Triffid's Flowers. Delivery is free, but you won't like it. Triffid's Flowers. And also from Not Exactly LegalZoom. Do you have porn stars in your past you need to keep quiet? Russian bankers with names like Ivan the Ice Pick who need to be taken care of? Well, thanks to Delaware's lax incorporation laws, for just $300, Not Exactly LegalZoom can help you set up a shady shell corporation of your very own in just minutes. So start paying off those politically inconvenient skeletons in your closet today. Find us at on. I'm sorry. Find us on Gab. Sorry, that kills me. You stuck that in there. It just kills me.
Find us on Gab.
Find us on Gab. Find us on Bumble. Not exactly legal.
Exclusive.
Not exactly legal Zoom. I'm sorry. Sometimes we crack ourselves up. My wife has a very, very
on Gab.
My wife has a very sharp and pointed sense of humor that just slays me sometimes. All right.
Okay, Tony has a question for us from which I think we could record a whole podcast, but we're not going to do that, but maybe you can touch on an answer for him. Bill Barr hid the memo that he said was the basis for declaring Trump above prosecution for obstructing justice. Judge Amy Berman Jackson said that the memo must no longer be hidden and must be released to the public. This was after she had read the unredacted memo and, with full knowledge of its contents, said that the intention to declare Trump above the law was predetermined, that Barr was dishonest in his public statements in this matter. Breaking last night, the Biden-Garland Justice Department is appealing Justice Jackson's decision. The appeal itself will delay release of the memo by a year if denied, and will prevent release of the memo if the original decision is overturned. So, is Biden trying to preserve the get-out-of-jail-free aspect of the memo? Is Biden trying to protect the Justice Department somehow, and from what? Is this a sign of corruption? Maybe protecting Barr according to a behind-the-scenes agreement? is there any way to see this appeal as good and proper? Biden is our hope for a sane government, and he is doing some good, but he is also entrenched in the system. I would really like to hear your perspective on this.
Huh.
And Driftglass, you had a really good point about the, what was it?
This is not the Biden Garland justice system.
Biden Garland Justice Department. This is what jumped out at us.
Right. This is the Garland Justice Department.
Yes.
It is bizarre. I mean, it was horrible and very unusual that Donald Trump was up to his ass in the Justice Department, because it's supposed to be an independent agency run independent of the White House. The White House appoints the person at the top, but they're supposed to be entirely separate. So Joe Biden has nothing to do with what cases they choose or how they choose them, et cetera. Second, a lot of this has already been released. You know, Judge Jackson's talking about this has sort of spilled on a lot of what the content proves. So the idea that Bill Barr is a corrupt scumbag is sort of established fact now. Mm-hmm. I would like to see chapter and verse of this, but parts of it are already out in public and her opinion's out in public. So you have a general idea of how really, really bad this is. Mm-hmm. And third, I never heard anyone refer to Merrick Garland as a liberal.
You better not, because he ain't.
He ain't. Merrick Garland was chosen by Barack Obama because he would appease both sides of the aisle. Yep. He was the most moderate, tapioca, room temperature, down the middle choice that he could make that would get through, because his original, I think it was
his appointment to the federal bench was unanimous.
Yeah, I thought it was like 96-0 or 96-1.
He had a track record of appealing to everyone as being hyper qualified.
Yes. And so, and finally, maybe he doesn't think as a committed institutionalist that you put attorneys general behind bars as the attorney general. I know that John Mitchell went to jail. I sincerely hope Bill Barr goes to big boy jail for the rest of his life. But once again, I don't wish for things that I can't have. So it is, I don't think there's a whole lot nefarious going on behind the scenes. I think there's a whole lot of, well, you know, this is how the institution's supposed to work, and here's how the gears of justice are supposed to grind. I went through, you know, Fitzmas, waiting for Karl Rove to be indicted. That never happened. I waited for the Mueller report to be this scathing report that was going to bring down the Trump administration, and it never happened. I don't expect Bill Barr. Well,
now, wait a minute. It didn't happen because Bill Barr manipulated the release of that and issued a 4-page summary which was completely inaccurate.
And then in the alternate universe, Bob Mueller stood up and said, "It's all a lie. Here's what really happened."
He should have jumped onto the news immediately.
But he didn't.
But his personality wasn't that way.
No, he walked away from it and said, "Well, my job was to submit the report. What you all do with it, that's you." So I have no illusions that Bill Barr will go to big boy jail. I hope he will. But I think that there's a centrist institutionalist in charge of the Justice Department now, which is by and large a good thing. But it is very likely that he simply doesn't think this needs to be done right now. A year from now is fine. And that we're going to do things by the book, 1, 2, 3. And it doesn't make me happy. But it doesn't make me, you know, worry that the Justice Department is under the thumb of some, you know, blackmail going on behind the scenes either.
I don't think there's any behind the scenes agreement with Bill Barr at all. And frankly, I'm much more upset about the appointment to the Civil Rights Division and how Republicans simply do not believe in filling that seat.
That stands out as the, oh, you think black people should shut up and sit down. I mean, it really is. I don't know who needs to be proved to anymore.
Right.
But, you know, and I'm tired of repeating this finally reveals, because it was finally revealed to me, you know, back when I was in my 20s.
Right.
But it is clear.
They have never allowed a Democrat to appoint a director of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department. Uh-huh. And when Trump was in office, he just didn't appoint one.
Right. Because it's not, you know, and when
I don't need one. We're not going to have civil rights in America.
And,
forget it.
And John Roberts, you know, the guy who's going to call balls and strikes and just be, you know, just an institutionalist. One of the first
racism
things he did
is
was
over. Clap, racism clap, is over. Clap,
we don't need
done.
It. Yeah, we don't need we don't need the Civil Rights Act. Let's gut that. So I count on Republicans always doing the worst possible, most destructive thing they can think of for reasons that are best left to their individual psychiatrists and their priests and rabbis and what have you.
This 600th episode of the Professional F Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Why I Oughta, Revenge Reminder Services. Did you forget why you haven't talked to your cousin in 10 years? Why I Oughta, Revenge Reminder Services is there to remind you that your old coworker is still a sexual harasser, and that old roommate did indeed use your credit card to buy pizza while you were working late, repeatedly. Don't be nice to those people just because you forgot. Use the Why I Oughta Revenge Reminder Services.
This takes advantage of the great gift that liberals have of, you know, memory, our superpower. Memory. Hello, DG and BG. I enjoy your frequent commentary on your member of Congress, Rodney Davis. It struck me that he would be a perfect successor to Kevin McCarthy as GOP House leader, utterly spineless and self-serving. I have not read anything about him running for governor, but I have about LaHood in an article suggesting his district might be eliminated. Wasn't his father in Obama's cabinet? One might have expected better from him. As far as the political situation where I live, I reside in the last American colony, our nation's capital, and we will remain a colony thanks to Joe Manchin. Why he came out against statehood is incomprehensible. Maybe, maybe not. It is unlikely this would be an issue in the 2024 re-election campaign if he runs, which I think he will. I was in West Virginia last month, and Manchin is already running TV commercials about how well he is representing the state in the Senate. I would note that during the 2020 presidential campaign, I never once saw a Trump-Pence sign or anything similar here, and we voted over 92% for Biden. Sadly, Biden won the second lowest percentage of votes in my ward, but he still won 89%. Regards, Doug. Yeah.
An 89%. You're not trying hard enough there, Doug.
Come on, man. If you're not breaking 90 where you live, Doug.
Thank you so much for that letter. Darren LaHood's father, Ray LaHood, was in Obama's cabinet.
He was. He was a centrist, reasonable Republican.
Yeah. I don't expect better from Darren LaHood. No. Darren LaHood is Don Jr., you know?
We're familiar with the second and third generation of Republicans, George P. Bush. Yeah. You know, son of George W. Bush, son of George H.W. Bush. And they just get progressively lousier and more inbred and more nuts because they're running as Republicans. And you cannot win the Republican Party without being a terrible, terrible person. Speaking of which, this 600th episode of the Professional F Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Croc Blockers, the bad fashion choice alert system from the Cornfield Resistance. Hey, man, don't wear those shoes. Croc Blockers. And also, of course, we are once again sponsored by Laudable Audiobooks, the best audiobooks for the best people and only the best people. How do you get Laudable books? You don't. Laudable books. No, you may not subscribe.
We have a letter from Kristen. Kristen writes, "Hi, I love your podcast. My son got me into it, and I so appreciate the work you do. Listening is part of my Saturday morning house cleaning ritual, and I learn a lot every episode. I am a pagan, and I would like to ask you not to call people like Ann Coulter witch. All of my witch, pagan, Wiccan friends are caring, compassionate, intelligent people. We are witches and are the opposite of Ann Coulter and Republicans. Have a wonderful week, and again, thanks for what you do, Kristen." And I wrote her back and said, "I need to remember that we have good witches listening to this podcast."
We do.
That's fantastic. And you said you were going to call Ann Coulter a Gorgon.
Yeah, I'm just sticking to Gorgon from now on. It's descriptive, it's accurate, and it doesn't offend anyone in the Gorgon community that I'm aware of. So,
this 600th episode of the Professional F Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, the It's Dead Gym Association Termination Service. When someone you follow on social media loses their mind and starts sprouting "Stop the Steal" conspiracies, let the professionals at the It's Dead Gym Association Termination Service Photoshop them into an Ensign Dead Meat disposable crew member Star Trek uniform, and then delete them from your social media streams, phone, and other services permanently forever. Call It's Dead Jim Association Termination Service today.
We have a letter from Brett in Wisconsin who writes, "Hi, Blue Gal and Drift Class. Congratulations on 600 episodes. And here's for the next 600 and the 600 after that." Jesus, man, don't lay that on me. Wisconsin Tavern League Publishers. The crew of the Titanic cackling with delight as Captain Evers says, "Who stole the steering wheel? We needed to avoid the iceberg in front of us." Ah, they laugh and laugh, knowing it was they who stole the steering wheel. Into the lifeboats they climb, pockets overflowing with looted silverware and candlesticks, comfortable knowing when the ship goes down, they'll be able to paddle right down to Florida or Texas or someplace warm with no taxes. But that's the Tavern League Publishers. They got power, and they ain't letting go. Barf. Speaking of Wisconsin politics, watch out for Paul Ryan. I'm sure that dead-eyed reptile man has his sights on the presidency. He has the Trump blueprint for what he can get away with, everything, but also intelligence and knowledge of government to really drag this country into a regressive shithole it'll never climb out of. Aldous Huxley's ghost is already having severe anxiety issues about it. Will the people who spend their day asshole signaling to each other be able to make the turn back to regular boring politician? Ryan may not be crazy enough for the rub shit in my hair crowd, but I think we're about to find out. Barf again. And now, since I've only been a listener for a couple of years, I'm off to go back and listen to all episodes from the very beginning. Oh God, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Hugs to you and all my fellow listeners. Some random dude in northern Wisconsin, a.k.a. Brent. This 600th episode of the Professional F Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, the William of Ockham Shavers Club. Is your crazy Uncle Liberty no longer recognizable under all the hairy conspiracies he's always yapping about? Why not gift him a 30-day trial membership of the William of Ockham Shavers Club? Will it help? Probably not, but at least you can say you tried something.
And now we have a letter from Bill. Bill says, "Congratulations on 600 episodes of The Professional Left. Your podcast is a lifeline to me here in rural North Carolina. I listen every week and have since about episode 400. And I've been an espresso-based contributor since about 500. Well, thank you, Bill. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, is it ever worth it? You guys make me feel like I'm not alone. When times get dark and the people around me and the media conspire to push me to the center and to embrace some corporate bullshit, and I grow weak under the pressure, Drift Class and Blue Gal arrive every single Friday evening to set me straight and reorient me. For this, I am very grateful. Carry on, Bill from North Carolina, in an area so red we don't regularly get a Democratic candidate in elections."
Oh, I hate that. I just hate
that. We hate that.
When there's no one running against a Republican. That just breaks my heart.
Yeah. Yep. This 600th episode of the Professional Left Podcast is brought to you by our fake sponsor, Heritage Hole, your personal memory revision system. This is not Legacy Box, which guarantees to preserve your most precious memories intact forever and pays big-time podcasters actual money. Instead, Heritage Hole promises to help you misremember your ideologically inconvenient past. Paste it over with "I can't recall" testimony and burnish your brand new status as "I'm an independent." Heritage Hole.
I love Heritage Hole.
Yeah.
I really do. I love all our fake sponsors equally. They're all our children. I know there's a few we didn't get to. We'll pick them up on the next go round. But I think we need to round out this show by first thanking our angel nerd, Tammy.
Tammy has organized our website. Mm-hmm. She makes sure that our podcast is on YouTube every week. And she also makes sure that our Patreon listeners are taken care of. And we just love her.
She's amazing. So, she's amazing.
Thank you, Tammy.
And just found us as a listener, I think, and just decided to make us her cause.
And she saw our website was a mess and said, "I think I can fix it."
And boy.
Showed us a demo and we're like, okay.
Okay.
And we love our listeners, all of you so much. We got a couple of $6 donations this week with keep going, you know, a penny an episode.
Yes.
You want to do that? That's great. We appreciate those $6 donations and, whatever you can send, we just want you to know, we love you 3,000.
We love you 3,000. We really do.
We love you 3,000.
Yeah. Just so you know, Angel nor Tammy does lift us up, but Fran does all the sound editing, putting together and making things sound good, leaving giant slabs of me blathering about David Brooks on the floor. So she's doing the work of at least three people here. And I love her like crazy. Even if we weren't doing podcasts together, we'd be talking like this because this is what we do.
That's right.
But she just works so very, very hard. I wish I could give her a raise. It broke my heart when she talked about her job and then mentioned her boss is John Amato, because then I realized, oh, that's right, I'm not her boss.
No, not exactly. No, you're not exactly.
We're a team, and we love each other very much, and we're glad to share this with you guys every Friday.
And I love you too, Dirk Glass. And as of course, the talent in the trailer. So he's got the golden pipes and lots of memory of how things are and how things were. So quite a talent, and I'm very, very lucky to be married to such a fine man.
Aww.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is actually a dog, a lovely dog named Valerie. And Valerie loves to watch TV and is one of those dogs who barked at Trump but loves to watch Biden.
You mean like every dog?
Yeah. Like every dog. Mm-hmm. And of course, Valerie eats freshly poured dog food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve Pet Store Perfection or Dollar Store Direct, your pets will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. You can visit Valerie at our Facebook page or website, and you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag fire DeJoy. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. And after 600 episodes, it's a labor of love. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Our PayPal, postal address information, Patreon, merch, all of it is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the internet kitties cannot wait for the next 600 episodes. And thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional F Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2021 DGBG Productions.